Success is struggle adjacent. No matter how successful you are or how big things can get, there will always be struggle. If you are on the fence about taking that leap of faith, yes, there will be ups and downs. That first initial 6 months is going to be a struggle. We have to make those mistakes.
I want to talk a little bit more about these new segments that you were doing, just media in general. Talk to me about best practices, any tips you have.
Be in the moment, because life and TV segments in particular move very quickly. How do we enjoy the moment? How do we land and say, be here now? That's a huge lesson to making, whether it's segments or life, engaging for other people as well.
Well, everyone, welcome back to Success Rewritten. I'm Emily Lomenzo Washkovic, and today I have with me Alex P. Taylor. Alex has an amazing journey. I'm so excited to dig into it. But really, the highlight is he is on the journey to becoming an author right now. And I am so excited to tell you more about that book, when it's coming out. But before we even get into that, Alex, welcome. Can you start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Alex P. Taylor. I am, for all intents and purposes, a media personality, a food content creator, a nachopreneur, I like to say, and a soon-to-be author as of August 25th. So exciting.
It's amazing. And just the fact that you already have the book, the date, all of that. I know there was so much blood, sweat, and tears that came before this. But before we even get into that, take me back to early days, Alex. What were you like growing up? How did your career journey kind of start? Talk to me about what those early days looked like.
Well, I've always loved food. So I think that is a common denominator, because food brings people together. And growing up in an Italian-American family, I would say that was a big piece of my life, food. My Nonni Roro was the most wonderful cook, and I would sit by her and watch her making all of the things that she made and say to her, wow, you are amazing. And I think ultimately a lot of food things in my life come from her. And I'm so happy to still talk about her and embrace everything that I've learned from her.
Well, and if I know anything about Italian families, they love to cook. They love to feed people. That's like a love language for sure. What were some of those dishes that you remember from growing up? Did she have some specialties that really stick with you?
Yeah, you know, being Italian, she always, you know, she made her anchovy pasta, that sauce. I can still vividly remember her sauce. And, you know, it's so funny. One of the core things that I remember in terms of my life is every birthday, she would make me a chocolate cream pie. Now, that's not Italian, but it's something that I always looked forward to. In some years, I would say, how about a pumpkin pie this year? And she would just make whatever it was that I requested. And it's just a beautiful memory of my life. So when I think chocolate cream pie mainly, I think Nonni Roro.
That's incredible. And I love those memory dishes that kind of bring us back. And I think it's fun to see how your palate evolves through life. So take us to that next stage. What were you doing in those early career days? What was the food scene like for you as you were getting into working?
Well, my first job, to be honest, was working in the pizza kitchen. So it was an amazing time in my life where I was mainly a pizza cutter, because it was kind of an assembly line of things that were going on in the kitchen. But during my breaks, I would explore different toppings and different flavor combinations, which I think always led me to, how do I make something that's different than what people expect or what people know?
I love that. And I think it's always so fun when you talk to people that are foodies, just to hear like how that developed for them. So now let's fast forward a little bit. I met you through Yelp, which is so funny to me, all of the connections and relationships that have come back as I've departed from Yelp. But tell us a little bit about your life around that time and kind of what you were doing in those days.
Well, I will preface this and say that 10 years before that happened, I had a job that was the most amazing nonprofit community outreach program. I was the program manager for the Connecticut Youth Forum. And with that job, I would visit different schools and travel all across Connecticut and give topical conversations about things that teens wanted to talk about, whether it was racism, stereotypes, peer pressure. These were core things they wanted to talk about, and it was amazing to give them a platform. So I would have a core group of students I would work with, and we would come up with discussion guidelines that would basically make it very teen-centric. I would lead the conversation. So sometimes it would be between 200 students to 350 students at a time. And this was a wonderful, amazing job because it was also adjacent to this main component program, the Connecticut Forum, which put on celebrity panelists, conversations at the Bushnell Theater in Hartford that I would also bring the students to. So I would often get backstage passes to, you know, meeting people like Michelle Obama. And, you know, that was amazing. But there were so many amazing authors and musicians and politicians that I met through this job. And then COVID happened.
Well, and for everyone, that shifted things. But before we even get into that change, I'm so glad you reminded me, Alex. I almost jumped right over this huge and very impactful part of your career journey. Let's talk a little bit more about this time, because I think fostering those conversations, but also being in rooms with that, you know, youth and the next generation, I'm sure there was so much coming up and that you were feeling. What do you kind of reflect on now from that time period? Knowing now, especially this was pre-pandemic, what were some of the really positive takeaways or maybe some of the sadder and more like eye-opening moments that you had through that journey?
So I would say for that situation, it definitely gave me some very important skill sets that I walk away with for the rest of my life. And being around that creative, youthful energy, but also being a creative person myself, just amplifies that. When you're with like-minded and like-energy people, it continues to grow. And I think, too, with that job, one of the things I'm proud to say was that I was able to identify some positive spark or energy within the students and amplify that for them as well. So this was a really magical job to have. It was a nonprofit though. So you deal with, here's this amazing environment, but the pay is not going to be amazing. And do the benefits outweigh financial stability sometimes? It did for 10 years.
Well, yeah. And I would say too, sometimes even the resources you have access to, which can be so frustrating or challenging because the nonprofit can have an amazing mission and really be making like huge change, but they don't have access necessarily to the funding that maybe a big corporation does who doesn't have as powerful or important initiatives. So I can only imagine what that tug and pull was like. Let's talk now about the pandemic. So COVID hits, everyone's world is kind of turned upside down. What was happening for you at that time? What did that transition and change look like?
Well, I like to say too, there's mandatory pivoting in life that happens. Mandatory pivoting. So instead of being able to go into classrooms and go into schools and bring students together from different schools and merge them all together, we switched to a Zoom version, which loses that connectivity and it loses that magical feeling slightly when you're pressing mute and you are, you know, having someone monitor things so that they can field questions that typically you would just be on a microphone and ask yourself or come up with on your own accord. So I think that was a struggle that led me to saying, what am I going to shift to? Now, at the same time, 3 months prior to COVID ending, or beginning, I should say, 3 months prior to COVID beginning, I was starting something on Instagram called the Nacho Bell Brothers, where I would rate the nachos in Connecticut and beyond. I traveled with my best friend down to Florida. We were trying the nachos. We were rating them with 1 to 10 maracas. There was a whole system. We had the perfect nacho formula. There was everything going on with this. And COVID happens, which also then shuts that down as well. So I shifted gears slightly to making the nachos at home. When I started making the nachos at home was really when that aha moment or the light bulb goes off that says, maybe you should start writing these recipes down. And that leads me to kind of where we're going to end up eventually. But also I would add just one more thing is that during that limbo stage of what was going to happen with the Connecticut Youth Forum, I also interviewed to be a community manager for Yelp Connecticut, which is how now this connection happens between us. It also started on Zoom as well.
I know. I was just thinking yesterday, I was like, I know Alex and I were together in New York, but everything else we did was on video. And we were in New York together for like 20 minutes. It was not very long, but you and I have that like energy that we were making stuff happen over Zoom. And I felt like I knew you already. But I totally understand how you're the kind of person, like you got to touch the people, you know, like I know you enough to know that you can bring the energy on Zoom and make people feel like engaged and excited and like they're in the room with you. But you also need that like human to human. So talk to me a little bit about the nacho thing coming to a halt, because I feel like that was probably even more emotional than the other work, because it's like, this is just getting its momentum. And I know you, you're like an empath, and the other people where everything was being shut down are these business owners that you were going to go visit and feature their nachos. So like, how were you feeling? Like, just talk us through what that period was like. Were you feeling really like dismal, or did it feel like this will be over soon?
I didn't think it was forever. But I will say having the Zoom experience from the Connecticut Youth Forum transferring into Yelp Connecticut was an easy transition for me. So it wasn't something foreign and actually at the Connecticut Youth Forum, I was the one who initiated the entire staff using Zoom. I said, we have to shift gears. So they said, thank you for, you know, bringing that to the table, because we had to, again, mandatory pivot. This is what life is all about, right? It is. True.
The differences between when you're choosing a change and when the change is happening to you, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So with that said, one of the magical moments I remember from Yelp Connecticut was one of those first Zooms that I did with a business owner. And this was Chelsea, the owner of Red Rock Tavern in Hartford. And I reached out to her and I said, I'm already a huge fan of nachos. I've been making these at home. Do you want to make what essentially is their monster nacho through a Zoom, and we'll do a tutorial and share tips back and forth with how do we make the ultimate nacho? And she said, yes. And I remember that feeling when I step off of that first Zoom that we did with Chelsea. And I said, oh my God, I'm making a living making nachos now. Another light bulb goes off and says, why should it stop there? Why should it?
Right. Right. Well, and I wrote down earlier, you went from making nachos, or you went from rating nachos to making nachos, you know? And it's like all of these moments might have happened down the line, right? Like growing this nacho enthusiast thing, you never know what direction it could have gone without the pandemic pivot. But at the same time, your brain was always seeing these opportunities. And I think there's something to be said for that. Like looking for and putting your energy into things that excite you and sometimes taking a risk. Like, not everything works out. Not every idea or collaboration, I'm sure, was successful, but you were really throwing things out there that you were passionate about. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I've always been a creative person. And I think that there are constantly ideas generating from me. I'm a huge fan of co-creation as well. So I think working with other like-minded or creative people can lead to a wonderful, amazing outcome. And that to me is what I constantly crave. I crave that creativity. I crave that connection. At the same time, I also enjoy my alone time. So I'm not going to say I need to be around people all the time. But when I'm creating, I like to bounce things off of people. And I think it's a great tool for me to recharge myself as well.
Well, and the creators that I see who are the most successful are always the ones collaborating. And that's business owners too, right? Entrepreneurs. The ones who look at it as collaboration over competition, they're always winning. And collaboration looks different all the time, right? Like, it could be ideas that you're collaborating on. You could be literally doing like a pop-up collaboration, but there's so many ways that you can partner and work with other people. To kind of share more for people who don't really know much about Yelp, can you just give like the overview on what a community manager does? And not in the pandemic time, like, in the non-pandemic time, because you were both, right? You were like generating these virtual experiences to engage the community, but then you also were still at Yelp when it transitioned back into some in-person again with the community.
Absolutely. I would essentially say for a role of community manager at Yelp, you are essentially the mayor of your state or your area that you're representing. Oftentimes, there's probably a strength in the fact that you've grown up in that area. Or, you know, I've actually seen the flip happen where they just moved there and suddenly they're seeing it through the eyes of a newbie. And there's this excitement about exploring the area and really getting to know it at the same time with other people. So I think to me, the answer ultimately is you are the mayor. You are creating events. You are creating environments where you can support local, where you can help community grow and build and bring them more success in their life.
Well, and what I love about that role and how it was a perfect segue from what you had been doing is like, the community building, the elevating of stories, and the connecting of people is truly the foundation of both of those. And you are so good at that, like helping people's story come out, helping them highlight the things that maybe they don't even know are like their unique advantage. Can you just talk a little bit about that skill of yours, like storytelling, elevating voices? Like, where does that come from?
You know, it comes from within. I think you're born with something like with that gift, let's say. I think that it's inherently there, and whether you choose to express it or not depends on maybe the situation you're in. I will say, going back into the Yelp Connecticut role, a door cracked open for me while I was with Yelp that led me into a studio setting in terms of storytelling on air and ultimately becoming a media personality in my neck of the woods. And I'm so grateful for that, because while it cracked the door open, ultimately I kept the door open. And even after I left Yelp, this was a situation where producers said, "We are so happy to have you still doing this. You can talk about anything you like," because at the end of the day, it wasn't necessarily the organization you were with, but it was the personality that you have and how you were able to relate and interact with the hosts. And since then, for 3 years now, I have been involved in Connecticut media, not only Great Day Connecticut, which is a huge home to me, Fox 61, WTNH8, all of those stations have become family. I've even transferred over into radio on 96 TICFM, with Gina J, who is my wonderful person that I do the trending reports with. And it's a truly magical experience that I've had, which I would say, you know, it's something now that defines me as a person, but it's always been there. It just needed that situation, that opportunity to be able to go with that.
I love that. And I think it's so cool when you do something, you kind of dabble in it, and then you think, oh, I love this. Like, I would like to do more of this. And it's so obvious to me why those relationships easily blossomed into more opportunities. But let's talk a little bit about what those segments looked like and kind of what that media life journey started as. I mean, you were going on air a lot of times to help highlight local businesses, right?
Correct. So I was doing local business showcases. But eventually that also led to some nacho-centric things that, you know, it was an amazing time because it was doing things that I loved and also talking about things that I loved. And from there, it led to more situations where I was able to be as creative as I wanted to be. And at the end of the day, I am now doing cooking demonstrations on Great Day Connecticut and beyond. And that to me has always been in the back of my mind, a dream of what would it be like to do a cooking show or to create this new recipe. And then all of a sudden it's in alignment with my debut cookbook, which is, this is just a mock copy, but I'm holding something physical in my hand right now that was once an idea. And to me, that is the ultimate success. When you can bring something to life that is simply a thought and let that thought grow into a beautiful, let's say, nacho tree, that is the success that I think to me is the most meaningful.
Well, and what I love about this journey of yours is you have this tangible item now, but there were so many layers and stages to building this. And the journey really has been multifaceted. So it went from testing and rating nachos and traveling and featuring places to actually conceptualizing how do I put together nachos and make nachos that people might enjoy. Talk to me a little bit about that development phase, going from rating and checking out other places to trying your own. Is it often like you're looking at or mirroring things that you see? Are you coming up with own unique recipes? Like, how did that transition go?
I think for me, I am not in any sense of the word a traditional nacho artist, let's say. I want to create fusion. I want to create international blends. I want dessert nachos. I want presentations that are going to be huge, wow factor, oftentimes wild, like let's say a nacho buffalo cano or a wheelbarrow nacho, which is a response to Guy Fieri's trash can nacho. I think there's a lot of prompts in life, but I will also say too, a relevant theme throughout the cookbook is 1980s. So to me, there is this very 80s-centric vibe, pop culture, just embracing a lot of different things and also including song selections with each recipe that I'm doing, which is amazing. And I think it gives this overall experience as opposed to just being a standard traditional cookbook, which, by the way, so a traditional nacho consists of the chips, the cheese, and the jalapenos. That was the first nacho ever invented in 1943. And I think, you know, nachos are relatively new in the grand scheme of the world. There's so many paths that led to the nacho becoming, whether it was processed cheese developed by Rico's Cheese, Frank Liberto, he put that together. There's so many things that have led to where we are that led to me actually being able to write a solely based nacho cookbook with many different styles of nachos, that is.
Well, I'm so glad you gave examples of some of the styles, because I think people, even myself a couple of weeks ago before we were reconnecting, I think of nachos in a very limited way. And so I'm glad you gave some good examples for people so that they can get a sense of what they're getting. Something else that I really love about this journey for you is you have learned about the history, the evolution, what people have done before in the field. And I think that goes from fan to like enthusiast and like community member of the thing. Like, how, talk to me about that. Is that just a passion of yours? Does it like ground your work? Like, just give me more.
I've led to the path of nacho historian or nacho expert at this point, but that's how interesting life is. Did I plan to be an author of Totally Nachrageous? Did I plan to become a nacho historian? No, but I would say everything starts with a person or everything starts with someone. So I should give a shout out to the creator of nachos, which is Ignacio. His nickname was Nacho, last name Anaya. So that's how we get the word nacho. And the first nacho ever was called Nachos Especiales. And that was created by Ignacio, nickname Nacho. So it all starts somewhere. Look, I'm giving you the nacho history again, and I don't even mean to, but it's just innately within me now.
But I love it because it speaks to people who love nachos and it welcomes people in who maybe have eaten them but never thought much about it beyond that, you know? And that really is the intersection of community building, which I think you have done so well in so many different facets. And to me, you just do the things that you like and you really lean into your experience. So even the theme of 80s with the book or like associating a song with each recipe, that's your personality coming through. And that creates a niche basically, or like a community of people that are engaged in following you. I know you're good at marketing, but do you feel like that was intentional or it more so just happened because that's where your passion kept developing?
I think I've always been a party organizer or bringing people together. I have a friend of mine who said that I would have been Facebook as a person before Facebook existed, of connecting people together. And I agree with that. I think that's a very true. I was constantly taking pictures, except at one point they were going into photo albums. I would always host these really fun, whether it was holiday parties or dinners or brunches. And I still continue to do that, creating these environments for people to come together and thinking sometimes, are we mixed? How can I mix certain groups of friends together so that they will become friends? But also, this will be highly entertaining to see how this group interacts with this group. So I think at the core, I've always done that. And it's just continued to amplify throughout my life. I guess I'm a party enthusiast.
A party and nacho enthusiast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I love it. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about these new segments that you were doing, just media in general. I feel like a lot of our listeners maybe would like to do that, or it scares them a little bit. Like, talk to me about best practices, any tips you have. Do you still get nervous before segments? How does that all go down?
I think that now that I've done this for a few years, and even my mother will say this, who constantly watches every segment and will call me and say, great job, you did it again. You know, and I, you know, every time she actually does ask me, do you ever get nervous as well? And I think the answer right now is I've done it so many times that I think once you perfect your craft of what you're doing and you know certain innate core things that you have to do during segments in terms of conveying a message, making sure the host that you're speaking to also feel connected with what you're talking about, perhaps also asking them questions as opposed to you just letting the questions come to you. I want to think outside of the box in terms of how do we keep it entertaining? How do we keep it engaging? So in some senses, I guess that's also a production thought process that goes into whenever I'm creating talking points for my segments and saying, here's the outline. But also I've learned, and you know, this could be within the last year, of talking points are great, but you kind of want to throw those away at some point and say, this has to be free flow because it has to come from within you. And to also make sure you're constantly listening at the same time to what's being asked of you and not just be tunnel visioned on knowing, I just have to make this. This is what I have to do. It brings me back to also be in the moment, because life and TV segments in particular move very quickly. How do we enjoy the moment? How do we land and say, be here now, which is a saying I've had for many years of my life that I've embraced. And I think that's a huge lesson in general to making, whether it's segments or life, engaging for other people as well.
Well, and especially when you're on the news segments, sometimes it's so short, so quick, and you're like focused on what you think you want to fit in, but you do have to really be present and listen and not just think about your talking points. You have to be having a dialogue.
Absolutely. You know, I can have between 4 minutes at one station to 7 minutes at another station, which is actually a very long segment.
Oh, yeah.
Of thinking, how do I talk for 7 minutes? But eventually you also realize 7 minutes goes by like that as well. And you can still struggle to get the last soundbite in that, you know you have to convey. And it also becomes more interesting as well when you're representing other businesses, because you have certain things you know you want to say about them. And if you get caught up in the beginning, having pleasant conversations with the hosts of catching up, you may not end up with enough time to fully say what you need to say. So it's constantly a balance of
yeah, absolutely.
At the same time.
Okay, so you started doing these media appearances. The Nacho stuff was also evolving because the pandemic. So it was kind of changing how you were showing up in the Nacho sphere. But then you went on Below Deck. Like, that was obviously because of all your foodie stuff. But what the heck? I mean, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, I think Below Deck is also one of those top core memories of my life in terms of, and I'll be honest with you right now, I had never left the country, the United States of America, before I went on reality TV. So Grenada, which is where we went, was my first time out of the country. And I will say it's kind of like hopping over from just a normal experience to a ultra heightened just experience that I now get to watch the first time I left the country on Peacock or on a streaming device. And I think it's a wonderful home movie for me to see that experience over and over again. We celebrated Christmas and New Year's Eve on the show. I love holidays. I embrace parties. So they really decked out the entire boat for Christmas for us. It was such a magical memory of my life that, you know, it almost at some point makes me want to do it again. I can't say if I ever will, but, you know, I think maybe someday I would like to do that again.
That's amazing. And I just remember seeing somewhere, whether it was something you posted or someone else, like when it was just getting announced, you were going to be on this season. And I was thinking, wow, that is so wild. Like, what a crazy experience to then jump into reality TV, which, you know, there's so much that I'm sure we'll never know as just the viewer. But what was it like? I mean, what can you share? Tell us as much behind the curtain as you can.
Wow. Yeah, I think I'll share some thoughts about reality TV, because I think for me, I've always walked into it as be yourself. But what I will say I've noticed is that certain maybe people when a camera is on them become a hyper version of themselves that may or may not be authentic. And I've noticed this, you know, it was very interesting to see certain people that I know in that environment suddenly become ultra heightened XYZ. And I won't go into the exact characteristic traits, but I will say it was very telling in terms of what was your agenda or what was your motive of coming and doing this. Were you here to have fun? Were you here to enjoy the opportunity? Or were you here for your 15 minutes of fame and thinking, how can I plot and how can I get to a point where I do something wild enough that this will give me the camera time that I want? And I didn't go into it like that. That wasn't me, but I saw.
Right. Well, and I think something that's interesting about that experience, but I think also anyone who's getting well known in whatever arena, right? Reality TV, or maybe you're coming up in your industry or whatever it is. there is an element of how that changes how some people show up, portray themselves, etc. But I also think, like, as you're becoming more well known and people already knew you in a very, like, respective realm before you did the show, there's now a different version of what people know you for, right? It's like they saw you do this show, so now that's how they know you, or maybe how they found your content. But I think for you, your personal brand is very authentic. And so it's really drawn and attracted really positive opportunities beyond it. Can you just talk about life after it went live? Because I know there's obviously this period between when you had the experience and you're on the fun, and then it goes out, and so many months have passed for you. But what was that like when people started maybe discovering you or looking you up and then seeing the work that you had done already or were doing with your food?
This is such a great question, because what I will say, and it's unique to me, that because I was already on a local platform doing media, what was a wild change was that suddenly I was in a national arena where, instead of just people from Connecticut who may say, oh, I know you from XYZ, or I've seen you on this, now suddenly you have people reaching out to you on your Instagram page from different parts of the world or different parts of the United States, really, that say, oh my God, I loved how positive you were. I loved how appreciative you were. I loved how your group really conveyed having a good time and not being jerks, which is something Below Deck can be known for if you watch the show. I think that that's something that really does happen. But I will say, it was such a switch to then see it grow much bigger. And being the primary of the charter that happened on Below Deck, you will get probably the most focus because you are the primary, the leader, the organizer of bringing that charter together. And with that said, that it was actually, it felt normal. I was suddenly doing podcasts with people that do different Below Deck podcasts, again, on a national level. It was also about continuing on with media appearances, not just speaking to local business, but to also speaking to having this amazing first time experience leaving the country on a national level or international level at that point. So I loved the process. I thought it was growth for me. I thought it was continuing to grow already what I was doing, but then keep that momentum going. And I think Below Deck also was a spark for me in terms of, here's another route and another path and another thing for you to think about that can be an option. Because here, maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but even after the second episode aired of that we did for Below Deck, so the New Year's Eve episode, the next day in real life, I went to become a featured table on Hell's Kitchen with Gordon Ramsay, who I met the night before at Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. And we just happened to be together at the same time. And I said, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm going to see you tomorrow, Gordon. And he said, why would I see you tomorrow? Like, what's happening? And I told him, you know, I was selected to be a featured table. So we were front and center to watch an episode of Hell's Kitchen called Hell on Wheels. And it was an amazing, I think it was episode 6. It was great. So that continued. And I will also add one more thing. I was featured on a episode, which was their St. Patrick's themed episode on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. So there have been these international things that, national media things that have happened. I guess it's international as well. I enjoy that. And I love the fact that circumstances like that keep happening to me. And I think sometimes that's not just an accident. That's part of the path, you know?
It's not an accident at all. It's, for one, I'm one of those people that thinks it's like the universe pushing you to what you're supposed to be doing. But I also think you have even said, you're talking to people, you're opening your mouth sometimes and saying, this is what I'm into, or this is what I'm doing, or this is what I'm interested in. And that starts those opportunities. And sometimes we just need to talk more about what we want or what we're interested in or what we're passionate about. And it can be hard for people. So I think that's just a great lesson. Like, you when you're out there in these opportunities, you're looking for other ways to connect and expand the reach of everything.
Maybe it's think big, follow your dreams, don't give up, and just keep going, right? And your path will eventually lead you to where you're supposed to be. But I do have something else I wanted to share with you as well. And this is kind of a mantra that goes on in my mind, is that success is struggle adjacent. So I think, to me, knowing that no matter how successful you are or how big things can get sometimes, there will always be struggle, because I think those two things live together. And that, to me, says you can appreciate the sweet, but also acknowledge the sour sometimes.
Absolutely. Maybe let's continue on that theme for a minute here. Talk to me about a time where maybe you have thought, like, what am I doing? You know, because now you're doing your own thing, you're building your own thing. So I'm sure there's been times where you've thought, I can't keep doing this. What gets you through when you're in those moments?
Well, I'll share another story with you, which I think you're going to love, is after I left Yelp and I started doing a more media-based job, creating Alex P. Taylor One Media, I would work with restaurants, perhaps sometimes managing their social media pages, because that was something I was really good at. And it was something that paid the bills again and was easy. I worked for a certain company that I actually brought up their Instagram followers up 48% in general from when I started. It was amazing. There was, again, a mandatory pivot where that was no longer something that I was able to do. But once that pivot happened, I said, okay, you know that you have the book proposal for your cookbook ready. You know that you've just been so busy doing things and jobs for other people, you haven't sat down and said, I need to send this out to as many places as I can right now, because from what I've been told, it can take 6 months, it can take a year, it can take 2 years for a publisher or an agent to get back to you. So there's two routes you can go. You can try to land a literary agent, or you can try to go directly to the publisher. So when that separation happened with that restaurant doing their social media for them on a full-time basis, diverting a lot of energy, it was April 2nd, 2025. That I remember the day exactly. It was the day after April Fool's Day. I sent out my cookbook proposal to at least 10. And I said my goal was send 10 a week, because I think that's a good rhythm while you're still continuing on. Once I sent out those first 10, the next week, I ended up ultimately getting an email from who would become my publisher of the cookbook. This goes against everything I was told in terms of how quick or how slow it is to get a cookbook published. Luckily, I landed in a wonderful publishing house, Quarto Books US, shout out. And I had a wonderful acquisitions editor, Jennifer, who saw my idea, who saw this thorough 80-page book proposal I had put together, which also is a lot more pages than I was told needed to be in a cookbook proposal. And she reached out and said, hi, I'd like to take this cookbook proposal and bring it to my team and see if we think it's a good fit. By Easter that year, I had signed a contract that said I would be a nationally published author. Now, if I hadn't separated from that company I was working with, I never would have had the time to sit down with that thought and say, here are the 10 places I'm going to send this out to. Now, also mind you, I tried the literary agent route as well. There had been a really wonderful agent that I truly wanted to work with, Sally Eckes. And she actually said, I'm not going to be able to work with you on this for XYZ reason. but here's my ideas and here's other places. This was a recommendation on her part of a place I should reach out to. So how great was this now? I circled back to Sally and I said, Sally, you're never going to believe this. In a week, I have now been offered XYZ. And it's much like buying a house where you say, I can't buy a house without a real estate agent. This isn't going to work. So I went back to Sally, who was my dream pick for a literary agent, by the way. And then we came to a point where I said, Sally, what should I do with this? Can you help? And she said, you know what? You've shown your hustle. You've shown your drive. Would you like to be a part of this agency now? And immediately I said, this was my ultimate dream come true to work with you. Now already I have a publishing deal that you can negotiate. And it was one of the most magical moments of my life that led us to writing all summer long. And now as of August 25th, 2026, I will be a nationally published cookbook author.
It's incredible, Alex. I'm so excited for you. I know it's not out and it won't even be out yet when this drops, but everyone can pre-order. And I don't think people understand how pre-ordering on books works, but it makes such a difference. Like the amount of books that you've sold basically at the first week the book has been out determines if you're a bestseller. And so all of the sales for pre-launch are so, so, so important. Am I getting that right?
Correct. And often with pre-orders such as mine, that you can find at alexbtaylor.com, there is a bonus 3 recipes that you will be sent prior to the book release. So it's an incentive to actually get that personal note, to get 3 recipes that no one else will have. And also at the same time, support the author, because like you said, those pre-rankings mean a lot. And I'm happy to share that as of last week, in Tailgating Cooking for Bestsellers on Amazon, Totally Notrageous was number 9.
Crazy. You know how I knew that because I pre-ordered mine on Amazon. So I saw that when I went through and did it. It came up right away. I didn't even have to type the whole name. It like knew what I wanted, which was incredible. Can you show us, like, I know you can't show us everything, but like more than just the cover, can you show me 1 or 2 pages? You can't.
I can show you certainly the back cover.
Okay, yeah, perfect.
This is me.
Perfect.
And what it says, our nachos are more than a snack. They're a lifestyle. Because as we said, this is a nod to pop culture. This is a nod to 80s. This is, and in a more formal description, I will say it's not just a cookbook. It is a celebration of food and life. And it's part-time capsule as well. So this is just one of these images here that a lot of the photos of me that are in the book as chapter openers. I had a wonderful photographer, Lisa Nichols of Bread and Beast, also a food stylist, Julia, that did such a great job with these. But I went through and selected a lot of different outfits that would be based off of the 80s. So you might notice this symbol on the back, which is actually from the movie Desperately Seeking Susan. These nachos are called Desperately Seeking Nachos. It's based off of the 80s movie that starred Madonna. And instead, she had that on the back of her jacket. So I'm putting together things and outfits for these recipes that are indeed nods to popular movies or artists or songs or different things that you can say. And even this is very small, but this is the logo to Totally Notrageous. This is very inspired by Saved by the Bell. So that's another 80s, which actually is right here. Sorry. So
yes, 100%. When I saw that for the first time, I was like, that's totally Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. I mean, not totally, totally. It's totally not outrageous, but I think it's a clever creative nod too.
It's a nod. That's what I should say. It's the perfect nod. I mean, and you wouldn't know if you didn't watch Saved by the Bell. Let's be honest.
I mean, it's 80s and it's just embracing that. But if I can give you a sneak peek, because
yes,
I've already started something else right now, which I think is pretty amazing to share. For this cookbook, it's nacho-centric and it's got the 80s vibe. But as an author, you're always thinking, I have to start writing the next book. So you're going to be the first. This is a scoop for you, is that I'm working on a cookbook that will have one chapter dedicated to nachos, but the other pieces will be a more fuller party inspired. Each chapter has a different theme to it. And this next book will be a 90s theme to continue on with kind of the decades that I'm going through.
I love that. That's so exciting. Thank you for sharing that with us as like a sneak peek.
It's a first.
I feel like we have to plug, like, where can people find your work? Where can they pre-order? Like, give us all of the things. And then everyone better go support, because this is so exciting.
It's so exciting. And I've had such a great conversation with you. So for My website is alexbtaylor.com. You will find my blog. You'll find recipes on there that you can certainly click on links for different media appearances and Below Deck and all of those good things. I do have an Instagram and a TikTok page that have the same handle, alexptaylor1. The one at the end is important. Please give me a follow, because what I will say is this is so truly important in life. And this is, you hear this all the time. You can be as creative as possible, but if you don't have a following on social media behind you, oftentimes you are eliminated from being considered to do something. So while I will say this again, please support those social media pages, as many people as possible. It is so important to support local artists who are just emerging and give them more of a negotiating power when it comes to different avenues they can take in their life.
Well, and there's so many ways that you can support people without spending any money. And that's what I love about this advice that you give about supporting creators. So yeah, just go off, share, tell everyone again.
Sure. I will say, hit the heart button, hit the like button, leave a comment. Those things are hugely important in terms of showing support and increasing the algorithm's outcome to individual posts. You have to have that engagement. And oftentimes that first 20 to 30 minutes that you post something, if you don't get the engagement right away, it prevents you from going to the next level with that post. I will say that. But then my last thing I will add is, please do pre-order the cookbook, because as we mentioned, and this is available at alexptaylor.com, there's a quick button. You'll get that incentive, but also you'll be helping how it positions the book in other national outlets, such as stores and different, you know, I probably can't name drop the places that the book is being shopped to right now, but I will say there's opportunities for Totally Notrageous, the actual cookbook, to be physically in certain locations, which is the overall, you know, game plan for the cookbook. But, you know, the whole process as well, working with the marketing team of your publisher to say, all right, how do we get you into these next spots? So I've seen the cookbook process from a nascent idea to now it being shopped into other areas and being available online. And it is truly an experience in my life I will always remember.
Well, Alex, you have shared so much incredible stuff along your journey. Is there anything that I didn't give you a chance to talk about before we sign off?
I think I covered so many different chapters in my life and things that maybe normally we don't talk about. And I think that's one of the things that I admire about your podcast, is that it's opening doors to have people talk about things sometimes they're uncomfortable about, or they don't have the opportunity or the platform to speak on. I think what's happening here is that we, in terms of what we just did, can inspire other people that are maybe thinking about a mandatory pivot or a optional pivot. And maybe that's the difference, right? Where there's those mandatory pivots and then there's the optional pivots in life. And if you are on the fence about taking that leap of faith, if you will, on your own, because again, oftentimes there's no choice involved and you just have to do it. I would say, yes, there will be ups and downs. Yes, you're going to question why you did it at some point. That first initial 6 months is going to be a struggle. And with that said, success is struggle adjacent. Again, I think that is such a core message that can be helpful to people in terms of understanding those two things are neighbors. They're always going to be next to each other in some capacity. And failure oftentimes, or making mistakes, is inevitable. We have to make those mistakes in life, and we have to have those failures or those mandatory pivots happen to us to have us appreciate the rewritten success that we acquire in life.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And I'm so grateful for you and your time to come on today. So thank you again for sharing.
Thank you for having me. And it's been a real treat to get to catch up with you again. So thank you.
Thank you, Alex.